I'm presiding this morning. Also on the panel is Judge Jennifer Frisch and Judge Carol Hooten. Judge Hooten's video might be muted just because of some difficulty with video and audio, but Judge Hooten is listening and can ask questions as well, of course, just via audio, audio. Great. We heard from both of you, your connections are good. Each of you has 15 minutes for your primary or principal argument. Counsel for appellant has 5 minutes rebuttal. So I will call the case. We are here this morning on A20-0687 Glacier Park Iron Ore Properties, LLC, appellant versus United States Steel Corporation, respondent. Counsel for appellant, when you are ready to go, if you could just state your name and a party you represent for the record.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mark Tobolsky for the appellant, Glacier Park Iron Ore Properties. And may it please the court. The district court erred when it dismissed this case at the motion to dismiss stage. The district court's error in saying that there's no set of facts on which plaintiff's claims could proceed flows from two fundamental underlying premises, both of which are flawed. The first error in the district court's ruling was not recognizing that there are two property owners here who each own a fee simple estate in real property. Glacier Park, who has the fee simple estate in the minerals, and U.S. Steel, who has the fee simple in the surface. Throughout the district court's memorandum on the motion to dismiss, the court referred to U.S. Steel as owning a fee simple interest, and Glacier Park is only owning some sort of mineral interest that kind of springs into existence. And that's incorrect. Since the two estates were severed in the deeds in 1932, both parties have owned fee simple real property estates. And a lot of the district court's errors, I think, flowed from not recognizing that we're dealing with two estates in real property. The second error, and perhaps the more fundamental error, is the district court's belief that unless the 1932 deeds themselves expressly restricted the surface use by U.S. Steel, that it could, in effect, do whatever it wanted without any regard for the rights of the mineral estate owner. And that's incorrect, and it's contrary to the fundamental principle of nuisance law that, one property owner can only use their property insofar as it does not injure their neighbors.
Counsel, can I ask about that then? Sure. Let's figure out what that injury would be and how a district court, if you went to trial, what a district court would have to ask itself. I assume the district court would be the decision maker or maybe a jury. I'm not sure what you would have, but whoever the fact finder is, what the fact finder would ask themselves in order to determine whether there's a nuisance here. And I ask that question because the deeds themselves contemplate that there will be some decrease in value to the mineral rights because they require, they permit the construction of structures, and they would require the grantor to reimburse for those if it decides to mine. So it would have to presumably pay for taking down the structures. It would have to pay the value of those structures. So in other words, it contemplates that the surface owner can do things that will make mining more expensive. And so at what point does that become a nuisance? And when I'm looking at your complaint, you talk about decreasing the value of mineral and mining rights. Well, that would happen if a structure is built. And then you also talk about completely destroying mineral and mining rights. So help me figure out how would a fact finder actually evaluate in this case that something has gone from being, an increase in cost to mine into a nuisance?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think you're right. It's a question for the fact finder here as to where to draw that line. We agree. The ground does not have to be left fallow as an open field. The deed contemplates that there could be buildings or structures. But while a building or structure, because we would have to compensate for it under the provisions of this deed, may increase the cost of, eventually engaging in surface mining, what the conduct at issue here is something fundamentally different. It is across over 100 acres, piling waste rock up to 200 feet above ground level in such a way that essentially we'll never be able to access the minerals.
Now, and why is that? Isn't it always just a matter of cost? That's what I'm trying to figure out. If you have, a $5 million institution built or something on the property that you would have to reimburse for, Would it have to be, I mean, you can always move rock. It's just a question of cost, isn't it?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor. And there was some evidence presented in the limited discovery during the temporary injunction proceeding, but we would present more evidence that when you have stockpiles of the size that U.S. Steel has indicated they intend to build this to, that you realistically can't move these things. I mean, is there, you know, some theoretical, you know, $100 billion or something? Perhaps. But for practical purposes, once stockpiles of this size are built, they don't get moved and you really can't move them. Even in a theoretical world where perhaps it could be moved, it would take years and years to do it. And this deed specifically says, if and when we give notice that we want to open, we've opened a mine, we give notice we want to use the surface, they have to immediately vacate without delay. And based on our allegations and based on facts that we would prove at trial, these stockpiles, particularly if they're allowed to grow as U.S. Steel apparently intends to do, it's not a matter of doing it. You know, a large building, a stadium, you can implode it, you can remove it. Is there a cost with that? Sure. But this is a fundamentally different thing. This is a pile of waste rock that is so large that effectively can't be moved. And it essentially creates 200 feet of new earth above where the ground is and where our minerals are that someone would have to get through. And as we allege in paragraph 16 of our complaint, the practical effect of allowing this stockpile to continue would be to effectively destroy any ability to ever develop the minerals that are in place. And that, let's be clear, it's not disputed there are minerals that are in place under this land. Everyone agrees there's taconite there. But the problem is allowing this stockpiling that's already been done has affected this. And if allowed to continue to the extent they've indicated they want to go, would destroy an ability to ever meaningfully develop this mineral estate. It also causes an injury now to the extent we wanted to market these minerals. It has already created a problem because it is a use of the surface that is outside that which is allowed under this deed. We agree that the deed allows for the surface to be used for buildings and structures. And it can be used for other things that don't interfere with our ability to access the minerals. And that's the fundamental issue here. A building or a structure, there's certainly a financial cost because we have to compensate for that, and you have to remove it, it's fundamentally different than a stockpile, which is an actual physical barrier to the access to our mineral estate. And that access is a right we've had. It's a right that us and our predecessors have had since 1932. The deed expressly gives us not only the fee simple mineral estate, it gives us the right to access those minerals.
Is the claim that right now the amount of the mineral waste that's stockpiled on the surface, that has prevented you from marketing or doing any marketing mining or conducting any mining exploration activities yourself? Or is it what U.S. Steel intends to dump on the land is going to interfere with your ability to market the mineral estate?
So two answers to that, Your Honor. The dumping that has already occurred before we filed suit and some after we filed suit involves several million tons. It itself has interfered with part of the lands at issue. They haven't fully covered all of the disputed lands at issue in this case, but part of it has. So yes, so there's damage there. If allowed to proceed to the full extent that they've indicated they intend to over time, that if allowed to continue would practically destroy all meaningful access to the minerals underneath the tracks at issue in this case.
So if you exercise your rights to demand that U.S. Steel remove the mineral waste from the surface now so that you could conduct mining exploration or you could conduct mining activities, would they be able to move it now?
I think we'd have to have discovery on that. I think at where it is as we sit here today, with extensive costs and extensive efforts, it probably could be as it stands today. In our complaint, we talk about another situation up on the Iron Range where there are about 800,000 tons, about a tenth of what we're talking about here, that would need to be moved. And there it was going to take apparently more than a year to accomplish that. We're talking about a lot more than that.
And you have not, I mean, there's no mining activity on deck, right?
For the five tracks at issue in this case?
Right.
That's correct. We've not indicated we intend.
And you have not asked U.S. Steel to vacate the premises?
That is That's correct, because at this point we have not, because the our right to give notice to vacate the premises occurs if we open a mine,
right? And we or want to do some exploration.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Or if you want to do some exploration.
Actually, exploration is a little different. We can explore without having to give them notice to vacate.
Okay.
But if we actually want to open a mine and begin production, then we would give them the notice to vacate,
right,
at which point they would have to immediately vacate without delay. The issue here, as we've explained, and alleged, is that they simply won't be able to do it. And what they've done is interfering with our access to the property. And
so,
interfering
so
with
if access- I can, then I'm back to my first question, I think, again, because I'm trying to figure out how the extent to which this nuisance argument would apply if it increases costs for Glacier Park. So are you moving away? When I read your complaint, it seemed to be pretty much about, you know, increasing the cost by millions of dollars. You say a couple times in there, but you also do say in there making it practically, it won't be economically feasible or practically possible. So, and then today you seem to be talking about there would be actual physical barriers. I'm trying to understand what that means, what you allege relative to that at this complaint stage, and is that the standard that one Glacier Park would be physically unable to mine, as opposed to, you know, put in the money in time like they would to blow up the stadium, et cetera, and pay for a stadium?
Sure. And, Your Honor, I think it's both. And I need to separate two different things here, where we are today and where we are if U.S. Steel is allowed to continue this conduct. Where we are today, it's already cost is going to increase the cost substantially and thus harm our property because we have a right to access it under the deeds. And what they have done is something that is not permitted by the deeds. It's not a building or a structure, and it interferes with our access, and thus has caused us damage. If allowed to continue to the full extent they intend to, there will be a point where it'll be irreparable, that it won't be movable, and that we'll have lost all ability to meaningfully develop these minerals. And that's the fundamental issue we're dealing with here. And to be clear, Minnesota law has long recognized that interference with access to property is a nuisance. I would point the court to the Schmidt case cited in our brief. There, a fire hydrant was so close to a telephone pole that a person who bought a piece of property couldn't rent the house that was on it because no one could get their cars between the fire hydrant and the telephone pole. There was no wrongdoing there. It was simply cars had gotten bigger in the 50s and 60s, and no one could get to the garage. And there the jury found that was a nuisance, and the Supreme Court affirmed that and said, yes, because of the position of the fire hydrant compared to the telephone pole, that was a nuisance and limited the act, interfered with access to the property. That was a nuisance. It was enjoined and the court ordered the village to move the fire hydrant. And the Supreme Court affirmed that decision. So this idea that, you know, even if it can't, just because it can be moved with money, doesn't mean it's not still not a nuisance and not a nuisance to which we have a remedy in damages or injunctive relief. And, you know, obviously, there's issues here about, you know, how do we balance these interests? I would submit that those go to, one, a fact question about whether there's a nuisance, as the Supreme Court noted in the Highview case back in 1982. The statutory claim for nuisance comes from equity, and there's going to be a balancing there. You always have to balance the social utility versus the harm to the plaintiff. Similarly, as noted in Schmidt, you always have to look to the gravity and materiality of the harm to the plaintiff. So these questions about, you know, how much injury and how much is too much, these are all questions that are certainly appropriate questions for the fact finder to have to address. And what if it's a jury, the jury would be instructed on the matter. If it was, you know, the bench trial, of course, the court itself would deal with that. But what it doesn't prevent is to say that there can be no set of facts as a matter of law where a nuisance, where there's just no possibility of a nuisance here. The only way a mineral estate can be developed and mined is through access to the surface. Here, we have a fairly unique fact pattern where U.S. Steel is engaged in a particular use of the surface that is not expressly authorized by the deeds that will deprive us of our meaningful access.
Do you consider then buildings to be expressly authorized by the deed?
Buildings, yes.
Okay. So if a multi-million dollar structure were built, that would then increase costs by millions of dollars for Glacier Park. there would be no role for a court in a nuisance case to balance that structure against social utility and so on against the ability to mine.
That's correct, but not because nuisance doesn't have a role to play. It's because the deed specifically contemplates buildings being put on the surface.
So, if someone then, if Glacier Park then brought an action for nuisance because it was such an expensive building, it was going to make it so cost prohibitive, why, on what basis would that claim be thrown out on the basis of the deed?
On the claim that the deed specifically contemplates that buildings can be put in place. But a stockpile is not a building and it wasn't a contemplated use. Deeds sometimes do have express terms that talk about stockpiling on the surface and to the extent the surface center can stockpile. That exists in other deeds up on the range. It is not, however, in this deed. In a declaration of Matt Walter that was filed, one of the exhibits to that declaration, in fact, showed an example of such a deed. I'm sorry, my time has expired. Does the court have further questions?
Hearing none, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court, Andy Stanton from Jones Day on behalf of respondent United States Steel Corporation. Your Honors, I think there are really three issues here to consider in connection with this appeal. The first is that the plain language of these deeds controls the outcome, as the trial court properly found. The deeds specifically delineate what rights the parties have in connection with these severed estates. The deeds specifically list what rights the appellant have to control the surface, and they do have rights to control the surface in the event that they exercise them, which they have not alleged they have done and they have not done. And because deeds are interpreted like any other legal instrument, which is to say, according to their plain terms and within the four corners of the instrument, absent an ambiguity, there is simply no room for a claim of nuisance here. This is why the trial court found that the law of nuisance was, quote, completely inapposite, end quote, to these circumstances. And indeed, on appeal here, appellant has cited exactly zero cases where the law of nuisance has been applied between a severed mineral estate owner and a surface owner to contravene or supplement the clear terms of a deed. There are no cases cited from Minnesota. There are no cases cited from anywhere in this country standing for that.
But what about, does that mean anything? I mean, the appellant argued that this is such an extreme situation. I mean, where you have two mining companies arguing against each other, and you have, an extraordinary number of tons of debris and rocks being put on the surface. I mean, this is an unusual fact situation. Does that mean it obviates the law regarding what constitutes a nuisance and what doesn't?
Your Honor, I would submit that this is not as remarkable a situation as Your Honor has suggested. Mineral and surface estates have been severed in your state of Minnesota for at least 100 years. And the fact of the matter is that surface owners—
Well, that's not the issue. That's not the issue here, though.
Your Honor froze a little bit. I'll try to address where you're going.
Here the issue is.
Why don't you go ahead, counsel? We'll give you time to, thank you, Marshall, for stopping it.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay.
To pick up on the judge's question, the deeds here say very clearly that GPIOP, if they so choose, can enter and occupy the surface insofar as it's reasonable to access their minerals. They have not pled that they've provided such notice. They have not pled that they have any intention to provide such notice. They have not pled that they've attempted to market the minerals. They have not pled any facts that relate to any exercise of their rights. Instead, as you noted, Judge Smith, what they have pled is that the existence and further expansion of a stockpile on the surface will, with each additional ton, and this is paragraph 16 of their complaint, with each additional ton, add cost to future mining.
Now, all right, can I stop you right there, though? They did plead, though, that the maintenance and expansion of the A dump has resulted in the decreased value of the appellant's mineral and mining rights. Isn't that an immediate harm? I mean, I think we're talking about whether there's a harm here or an injury. I mean, if they want to sell these mineral rights, whoever buys them is going to say, wait a minute, how can we have a meaningful property right here when we can't even get to it because of all the debris and rocks that U.S. Steel has placed? So we think your mineral rights are worthless. We're not going to buy them. I think in the context of a Rule 12 motion, don't we have to assume that fact is true?
Well, Your Honor, first, I think you're saying essentially the same thing that the complaint says, which is that the expansion of the dump will increase the incremental cost to access the minerals. But the deeds address this question. So, for example, the deeds very clearly say that if United States Steel builds a structure on the surface and mining rights are exercised, that not only will GPIOP have to remove that structure, but they'll have to pay the reasonable value of the structure to United States Steel. United States Steel could build a football stadium on the land made of diamonds that's worth $500 million, and it could render the extraction of minerals non-economic. But this is the key point. The deeds do not reserve to GPIOP the right to profit from mineral extraction. GPIOP owns the minerals. They are entitled to occupy the surface insofar as is reasonably necessary to extract the minerals if they elect to do that. They have not done that. What they are not entitled to is to make money doing that. That's not a right that they have under the deeds. And in fact, the deeds address the economics of their potential exercise of their mining rights by providing they will have to compensate for the value of structures by providing that it will be their responsibility to remove surface, overburden, any other tasks that have to take place in order to access the minerals.
Did the deeds use that word overburden?
I don't believe they use the term overburden, Judge. I think it says rocks and soils.
Okay. And so I think that, I mean, so we know what the deal is with structures. And then I think the idea is, what does silence mean in the deed with respect to the rest of it? And does silence mean anything goes, even if it renders mining economically or practically infeasible or impossible? Or does it mean nuisance is the traditional way in which competing landowners who both have rights, you know, deal with the impairment of one's rights by something that lacks, you know, adequate social utility on the other side. And you know, I'm hearing from opposing counsel that there's some idea of practical impossibility once you get a certain amount of waste rock on top or what have you. And maybe in the mining world, that's true. Maybe at some point it becomes just practically infeasible. And isn't that something that could be, why couldn't that be, isn't it too early to decide that's out of the realm of possibility on a motion to dismiss? Isn't that something that conceivably could support a nuisance claim in the face of silence with respect to everything except for structures in the deed?
So I have three responses, Judge. And the first is to the first comment you made, what do we do in the presence of silence? Contract interpretation principles tell us what we do, because the deeds very clearly articulate the surface rights that GPIOP has, right? They can enter, they can take possession, and under the longstanding principle of expressio unis, when you specifically articulate the rights you have, the exclusion of other rights is controlling. And so silence here is not a gap to be filled. Silence here is an expression of the intention of the parties. The deeds could have been drafted to limit surface activities. The deeds could have been drafted to address stockpiling. The deeds could have been drafted to say any number of things, which leads me to my second point in response to Your Honor's question. The fundamental fallacy of the nuisance law analogy here, and why I think it's so important to recognize that there isn't a single court in the country that has ever applied nuisance law in a context like this, is that these parties are not, as GPIOP says in their brief, just like any other adjoining landowners. Adjoining landowners typically do not have detailed contractual arrangements between them that define their relative rights and responsibilities with respect to how they exercise their property rights. And so that's why, for example, when you look at the nuisance case law that's been cited by GPIOP, and there's only four cases, you see legitimate gaps that need to be filled. And that's why the law of nuisance has such utility in adjudicating disputes between adjoining landowners. Where a party grants, as GPIOP's predecessor did here, surface rights by deed in fee simple, they have the ability in the reservation clause to negotiate a full bundle of protections that they wish to negotiate. And if they had elected, they could have negotiated to preserve a right to profitable mineral extraction. That's something that could be negotiated. And a ruling by this court recognizing that the language of the deeds controls gives clear guidance to parties going forward. Absolutely clear guidance. On the other hand, finding that we need to gap fill with the law of nuisance will create enormous ambiguity and uncertainty in the relationships between mineral and surface owners throughout your state. When is a surface activity going to be deemed obtrusive enough to the potential future profitability of mining that may or may not occur, such that it can be enjoined by a nuisance law claim? Well, Mr. Tobolsky said that should be left to the fact finder. Interesting. If we do that, we have the potential for inconsistent rulings that are based upon subjective assessments of fact throughout your state. Perhaps a parking lot, you know, depending upon where the taconite is. And I should note, GPIOP has not pled that they've ever even drilled a hole on these tracks to assess where the minerals are, how deep they are, what their characteristics are, because they haven't. But depending upon where that taconite is, the straw that breaks the camel's back economically might be a storage shed. It might be a temporary staging area for equipment. It might be a parking lot. You might not need my football stadium built from diamonds in order to render mining non-economic. And if nuisance law is going to be used to answer those questions as a matter of fact, then what you will have is increased litigation, likely increased inconsistent outcomes, and tremendous uncertainty.
So, counsel, excuse me. So, just to make sure I understand your legal argument, which might be two arguments. One is, well, so even if you had a contract, let's say, I presume there's none like this, but let's say that the deed was simply, I grant you the surface, you give me some money, I keep the mining. That's it. Like no other discussion about rights, et cetera. And in that case, still in your view, nuisance law does not play a role. And then, is that right? And then in this case, you even have more because certain rights were granted. But tell me about the first one.
Yeah, Your Honor, it's a really good question because I think that here our primary argument is that the plain language of these written instruments in this case controls. If you had different written instruments, then it may not be the case that the plain language would control. But if you didn't have plain language controlling the outcome, but you still had the same factual averments that GPIOP has made here, which is not
interference with their right of access today. They are not alleging that they have tried to enter the land or possess the surface and been stopped. They have not alleged that they're going to do it. They've just alleged, if we do it someday, at a certain point, the level of stockpiling will be such that it will not be economic or practicable to do so.
Now, doesn't it make sense if there's a plan for that to get in early? Because if they waited till it all happened, I am sure the other side would be saying latches or something. I mean, why not get it resolved before disaster strikes for one or other of the parties here?
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, that when you're talking about a claim of nuisance injury, you either have it or you don't. And if your right of access has not been interfered with, and all the cases that deal with a mineral estate being dominant stand for the proposition that you can't block access to the surface when a mineral estate owner is attempting to access the minerals. There's a district court case from New Mexico that says the way that you use and enjoy a mineral estate is to extract it, and absent an interference with that activity, there's no nuisance. So the answer is that these written instruments control this case, but if these factual allegations were made in the presence of bare bones written instruments, there still wouldn't be a present alleged interference with real property interests.
Thank you, counsel. I hear no questions from my colleagues, so I appreciate your argument. Thank you, counsel for appellant. You have 5 minutes for rebuttal as soon as the clock is ready to go.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to pick up where Mr. Stanton left off. This concept that because we haven't opened a mine or given notice we've opened a mine, that there's no interference with the mineral estate, that is incorrect. And I want to talk about the fundamental policy expressed by the legislature in section 93.003, where the legislature said that it's the policy of the state to, you know, encourage the long-term development of production and commercialization of the iron And what Mr. Stanton and U.S. Steel are suggesting is we need to race and do it right now before they do something on the surface that will render that iron resource unrecoverable in the future. There's nothing in the law that says a party like Glacier Park that has a current vested interest in the mineral estate in fee simple must go develop it to keep the surface owner from doing something that would physically destroy future access when someone chooses to open a mine. It also causes present injury because, as we've discussed, it damages the value of those minerals in place. So that's the first point. The second point I'd like to respond to is a point Mr. Stanton repeatedly said. Yes, it reserves the minerals to Glacier Park. It doesn't reserve to them the right to make money from extracting them. I think that kind of gives away the game here. What U.S. Steel is saying is, look, under this term, yes, you have the mineral estate, but if we do something that precludes you from ever being able to extract those minerals, that's your problem, not ours. That, I think, shows that fundamentally what's going on here is a nuisance. They're stating that where a deed specifically creates a fee simple estate in Glacier Park of the mineral estate, expressly gives them rights to access it, expressly gives them right to remove surface and to develop and open and work mines, that as long as they destroy the ability to meaningfully exercise those rights first, it's too bad. And that's
I think the argument too is that where do you draw the line here? I mean, they clearly have a right to use the surface of this property, and there's no limitation on their right in the deed. So where do you draw the line here as to what they can and can't do with their property? And if you allow a nuisance claim here, where does it stop? I think that's, I'm summarizing the argument.
Sure. And I'd like to respond to that in 2 points. First, I wouldn't say that the deed is silent. The deed is expressed in that we have access rights. And it's true, we have not yet exercised those rights. But the question is can they do surface conduct that has the effect of destroying an expressly given right in the deed? The second point I would make here is that this idea of where we draw the line, I think the line, particularly for purposes of injunction, as opposed to damages, would be a use of the surface that is permanent and irreparable and will have a, will effectively destroy any ability to exercise our access rights in the future. And, you know, and nuisance is the legal doctrine that exists to protect real property rights. They say there's no, we haven't shown other cases where nuisance has been used in this way. Frankly, that's because we have an unusual circumstance where the surface owner is making a specific use, stockpiling, and as they said, up to potentially 200 feet high above over 100 acres that physically will preclude meaningful access in the future to the minerals underneath these lands. One case I would call the court's attention to, it's a little different, but I think it's relevant. It's Eternal Cemetery Corporation versus Tamman. It's a case out of my home state, Texas, 324 Southwest 2nd, 562. In that case, a party who did not own the mineral estate in fee, but owned a partial royalty interest, sought to enjoin the surface owner from building a cemetery on the surface, because the cemetery once built couldn't be moved. And there, the court enjoined the use of the surface as a cemetery, because as the court found, once that cemetery was built over the tract at issue, there would be no way to drill an oil well on that land. And the royalty owner, who again, didn't own a fee interest, only owned a royalty right, the court found, yeah, we're not gonna let you do that. We're not gonna let you destroy the rights. Now there, because it was not a mineral estate owner, it was only a royalty owner, it was done under an implied duty rather than nuisance. But here, there is an established doctrine that regulates the rights between two fee simple owners, and that is the law of nuisance. Unless the court has further questions, I'll yield back the balance of my time and ask that the court reverse or vacate and remand for further proceedings.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, both very much for your arguments and your briefing on this case. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in the statutory time period.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.